This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Hey everybody, this is Greg Gutfeld. This is The One. I am excited to have with me today the former editor-in-chief of Spin Magazine and TV Guide. But I'm here to talk about his new book, which has a lot of great stuff in it. If you are a fan of like mid to late 70s rock and roll, like I'm talking Cheap Trick, Aerosmith, Kiss. I was a huge Cheap Trick fan in the 70s. It was the second concert I saw. The first concert I saw was The Police at Zellerbach on April. I had to look this up. On April 3rd, 1979 at Zellerbach, because I was trying to do some research for my questions. And I found out that when I saw Cheap Trick open for Blue Oyster Cult, it was August 19th at Spartan Stadium, San Jose, 1979. A guy threw up on my feet, just threw up all over my feet. And I was taking pictures with those with a disposable camera. Do you remember those things? No one makes them anymore. Anyway, I digress. I'm with Doug Broad. His book is called They Just Seem a Little Weird, How Kiss, Cheap Trick, Aerosmith, and Stars Remade Rock and Roll. They Just Seem a Little Weird is obviously a lyric from Surrender, one of Cheap Trick's great songs. Doug, how are you?
I'm doing great, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing pretty damn good. How did we meet? Do you remember?
Oh, God. We met many years ago. I was actually on Red Eye.
Yes.
When I was at Spin, and we were talking about, I don't know what we were talking about. We were promoting some Spin thing.
Yeah. I thought I met you. But I met you before that, right? Didn't I meet? Because go ahead.
Yeah, we met then, and then we met socially years later around the Wild Hearts.
Yes. Was he in town or something?
Yes.
Ginger.
He was recording. Ginger was recording, and we all went out for drinks with Sam Piafa of New York Dolls and in Midtown, I recall.
Yes. My God, I would totally forgotten about the other guy. That's right. That was fun. I don't do that much anymore.
Yes,
I just hide in my apartment and listen to old records. So here's the deal. I enjoyed your book because it's so rich in detail, and I heard people that I didn't realize how bitter Bunny Carlisle is about Cheap Trick. But Bunny Carlisle, I'm going to talk mainly about Cheap Trick because I love that band so much. But what's the deal with Bunny Carlisle and Cheap Trick?
I don't know if he's so much bitter. I just think that it was one of the situations where the band had a very bitter separation.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was mostly personality related. Also, Bunny, from what I understand, did not want to keep playing long shows, and he wanted to do a long residency in Vegas when the band were doing Sgt. Pepper's. They were covering Sgt. Pepper's in Vegas.
Right.
And I know that there were a lot of issues swirling around then, and it just came to a head, and after many, many years, they parted ways.
Yeah, you know, Cheap Trick is kind of an interesting kind of way to see what people are like. If you gravitate towards Cheap Trick, it says something about, I think, your personality or your desire for something different. Because if you, as you know, the band was the weirdest looking band on the planet. I would say weirder than Kiss. Kiss was, you know, consistently in all this makeup, but Cheap Trick had two members of their band that looked like they should never be near a guitar or a set of drums. And then you had two poster boys, and together they just seemed like such an anomaly, and yet they made it work. Could they have been more successful if they looked more like an ensemble?
I don't think so, to be honest with you. I think, and one of the points of the book is I wanted to look at four bands that actually were theatrical and tried to bring a show back into rock and roll, because back then, a lot of rock and roll was just, you know, long-haired guys playing on stage without either without much enthusiasm or just with kind of a rote presentation. I mean, you had bands like Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd, but it wasn't that theatrical at the time. Then you had Alice Cooper, who came in with the, you know, with all the bizarro effects and makeup and blood and whatever. And then Kiss brought that to sort of the nth degree. But then Cheap Trick come along and they have this weird kind of duality of mm-hmm. the pretty boys and the nerds. And I think the visual presentation really sort of put them over. I mean, the music itself was different enough.
Yeah.
But I think it was the entire package that really did it for them.
Yeah, you know, I have to say the first Cheap Trick album is probably one of the darkest debut records I've ever seen. If you're talking, I think it's 1976, 77. And they were
77.
Doing, yeah, 77. And so they have songs, I'm not going to rattle off the titles, but they had songs about serial killers and just weird titles that you wouldn't normally see in other songs. And it just felt like there was something really sinister underneath the pop music, right?
Yeah, that was all Rick Nielsen, really. I mean, yeah. When I interviewed him for the book, he's a huge tabloid magazine fan, and he loves reading about really bizarre real life incidents. And you know, like you said, I mean that album has really dark stuff. There's sort of a pedophile song on that mm-hmm. record. There's also a song about suicide,
yep.
drug ODs. I mean, there's a lot of downbeat material, but they put it in like these sickly sweet melodies and really raw guitar, and it's just sort of a remarkable mixture of sounds.
Yeah, it's I mean they were kind of punk without even knowing that was happening at the time. I mean, I always felt that there was a kind of you could hear the Sex Pistols, or you could almost hear Johnny Rotten and Robin Zander, but I think that was just by chance, but they had a kind of a natural punk attitude to their hard rock, I think. Really? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they had been playing together, all of them, since 74,
yeah.
you know, pretty much before the Sex Pistols had actually come here. Although I know for a fact that at least Rick Nielsen was a fan, and they really liked punk rock.
Yeah.
But that was the thing about Cheap Trick back in the day. They were uncategorizable because mm-hmm. They weren't a metal band. They didn't look like typical hard rockers. They weren't quite punk. They weren't quite new wave. They were just this kind of, you know, interesting Midwest amalgam of all these things.
All right. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Did you ask, I think you might have asked Rick Nielsen, why he chose to dress like a member of the, was it the Bowery Boys? Which none of our – I don't know if anybody even knows what I'm talking about, who the Bowery Boys were, but
– I do.
Yeah. Remember they used to be on on the weekends on like some channel that would have like Creature Features. You'd have Abbott and Costello, and there would be some – every now and then you'd have the Bowery Boys.
Yeah, he looked like Hunts Hall, who was
yeah.
one of the Bowery Boys, who wore an upturned baseball cap and had this very kind of rubbery face. I don't know if it was, I actually didn't ask him if it was an intentional replication, but it just seemed too close.
Yeah.
to be anything else.
Exactly. Now I want to shift gears. When I was reading the book, I was having the same sensation. I was reading a book that Iggy Pop was featured in, and a lot of stuff. Oh yeah. Yeah. What book was it? About groupies, and mm-hmm. and when you read, so when you're reading about kind of the sexual exploits of the things that are going on in the 70s, you feel like you're reading something from another planet, because does that it's like the world has changed. And I'm wondering if I don't even know what my question is. It seems so foreign and strange. And do you find that when you were looking, when you were writing this stuff, that it was made you nervous or anything?
Not so much nervous, although, like you said, I mean, it really was a different time back then. And one thing I didn't really get into too much in the book was the groupie stuff and the sex stuff. I mean, you know, Gene Simmons was legendary for taking photos of all of his conquests. And actually, that's kind of a riff that comes out throughout the book.
Right.
All of these people, whether they're journalists or other musicians, Gene always had to show off his huge scrapbooks to these guys of all these women who were posed the same exact way naked on his bed in various hotel rooms.
Yeah.
All over the world.
Why was this so important to him? You know, that would just creep me out. I don't need to see this, you know, but
well, that's the thing about Gene. You know, Gene's, you know, is legendary for just being a very boastful person. And
right.
I think back then it worked to his advantage to boast about his conquest. I mean, I don't think nowadays that kind of stuff flies too much, but back then he was the guy.
Yeah. And I mean, it's interesting. I've talked to people in bands, and part of the reason that guys got into music was because of to get girls. And back then it was, I think, you know, that was just, you know, and, you know, that was just came with the territory, I guess. One band I never heard of, which is in your title, is Stars. How did I miss this band? Because you have them, you cover Kiss. I really didn't get into Kiss, and maybe it's because I just wasn't into the theatrics of it. I felt Aerosmith was too, hyper masculine for me. And Cheap Trick was like that. Cheap Trick was for nerds and dorks, but I didn't even know who Stars was. Are they from Boston also, or
no? They were a New York band.
Okay.
So the reason they're in the book, you know, I wanted to tell the story of 70s rock through a different lens, and you know, looking at the Gene Simmons 1978 solo album, when all four members of Kiss did solo albums, he had guest guitarists from Aerosmith, Joe Perry. He had Rick Nielsen play on that album, and he had this guy, Richie Rano, from Stars, play on that album as well. Stars were a band that were managed by Kiss's management, Bill O'Coyne. Mm-hmm. They were on Capitol Records for four records. They were produced by Jack Douglas, who produced the great Aerosmith records and the first Cheap Trick record and another Cheap Trick record. And, you know, they toured with Aerosmith, opened for many shows in the 70s for Aerosmith. And they were just one of those bands in that era that had many of the same advantages of these other bands and many of the same opportunities, but never made that leap. And I wanted to find out why. Why did this band that was so fortunate in many other respects, why didn't they become a success?
Mm-hmm. And what was the answer?
Well, the answer, I mean, there were many answers that were given to me. I think the main one was just that they couldn't get a hit song on the radio.
Yeah.
And back then, a rock band, in order to sell a lot of albums, had to have a top 10 hit. Stars managed to eke out a number 33 pop single, which actually I had never heard back in the day. I was like you. I mean, I knew who they were, but I'd never heard them. In the 70s, I'd seen their ads in magazines and I'd seen their albums, but I never paid attention to them. It wasn't until Rykodisc released their material on CD in 2005, I believe, when I finally heard them, and I actually ended up loving the band.
Yeah. You know, you brought up something about getting a hit, and I want to bring it now to the present. And when you're looking at the terrain, you know, it's interesting. How do bands... I mean, like pretending even without the pandemic, right? The pandemic has killed all touring. And I'm sure that you have friends that are just absolutely depressed, or, I mean, like if you, people in that I know in the music business, it's just it's been brutal. But how do bands survive now? How do, when you really don't have the radio, and you, of course, you have Spotify, but I mean, the royalty, kind of the royalty situation has changed. Is it harder to be a musician now than it was?
Well, I think it's definitely harder to make, you know, to get noticed now. I mean, actually, no, let me rephrase that. It's probably a little easier to get noticed because there are so many channels and opportunities to be noticed. Mm-hmm. And just one viral thing can basically, you know, make you explode. However, there's so much competition out there. There's so few eyeballs for so many bands.
Yeah.
And also, you know, in terms of rock and roll, I mean, Gene is always saying this, and I half agree with him when Gene says that, you know, rock and roll is kind of dead right now. The guitar rock is just not mm-hmm. a genre that is appreciated anymore, except by a very small fraction of the audience. So it's tough to be heard, you know, in today's environment when the ruling sound is not rock and roll.
Yeah, that's so true. And I don't know if that kind of guitar based music is going to come back. As somebody who just, you know, that's what I listened to. I adored that music and then got heavily into punk and was a punk forever. But I loved the three chords, the Ramones, the Clash, the Pistols. Now, I mean, and I don't know if it's age, but I just listen to almost entirely, with the exception of the Melvins, and some bands like that, I listen to electronic music. And I don't know why, if that's a mellowing or whatnot, but I've just got old. Why don't I just admit it?
You know, it's funny because, you know, everyone I talk to in the book, or most people I talk to in the book, tell me at some point they fall off the Kiss train. And yeah. I was one of those guys. I was a fan until around 1980. I saw them on the Dynasty tour in 1979. And then by the following year, I had moved on to punk as well. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like neglected to keep up with these bands, except for Cheap Trick, who have mm-hmm. always been my favorite band. Mm-hmm. But then when Kiss came back in 96 with the reunion tour, when they put their makeup back on, I kind of was all in again.
Yeah.
So, people's tastes change. And it's funny you mentioned the Melvins, because I interviewed Dale Crover for the book, who was a huge Kiss fan.
Right.
And he had told me, you know, so many people in the book were telling me that the Beatles on Ed Sullivan was the moment that made them want to be musicians. I mean, Bunny Carlos told me, Richie Rano from Stars told me, all these guys. I mean, it's a cliche, but it was true. But Dale Crover told me that it was seeing Kiss on the Paul Lynde Halloween special that was his Beatles on Ed Sullivan moment.
That makes sense to me. I've met Dale a couple of times, and I love his solo album, the last solo album he did, which is Flying Fingers of Fate or something like that. To me, it's very melodic, and then he's also got I think that's the album. They did a little TV show, and he's really great. I mean, super talented. That whole band's amazing. I get their new Melvins record is great. Even with the kind of throwaway comical songs, it's still like a solid 9-10 songs from the Melvins that you can count on. Well, look, Doug, I really enjoyed the book, and I always enjoy music books about rock music or music in general, because you have to really be into it to write it, and you have to really push for it to get published. Because I've been pitching music books, and like my agent's like, just stop it. You're gonna put your face on the book and talk about liberalism. But it's a great book. I would say, where can you find it? But everybody knows where you can find it. It's just go to Amazon, or is there a website that you have that you also want them to go to find anything?
You know, if a bookstore is open in your your area, it's probably there, or go to Amazon.
Yeah. So they just seem a little weird. How Kiss, Cheap Trick, Aerosmith, and Stars remade rock and roll. I heartily recommend it. It's also got pictures, which I love. And the great thing about the book is that like every paragraph is almost an anecdote. Or I always use the phrase hotspot when I'm writing. It's like there's always like something in each paragraph that is like a little morsel. It's a fact or an interesting quote, and the book is just like hotspot after hotspot, even about bands if you're not so much interested in. I learned a lot about Aerosmith. I didn't realize how decadent they were back then in terms of the drug use and stuff. But that's for another time. Doug, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
You got it. Take care.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.